us today. Old Benjamin Asquith.
I figured that out when I first saw his name.
Yeah.
I hadn't gotten it yet.
But that's good. It's good starting him out that way. I like it. All right. Let's go to Job chapter 20. What's happening here with Job is Job and his friends are beginning to take the gloves off. Okay, they're not being polite anymore. If you look at it deeper, Job is representing Jesus Christ on the cross, and he's being accused of everything in the world. Okay, and they see him as just the most vile thing that ever could be, and they're going to discuss him as such. But Job chapter 20, we start out verse 1 with, Then answered Zophar the Naamathite and said, Therefore do my thoughts cause me to answer, and for this I make haste. Well, in other words, my thoughts cause me to answer. How's that, you know? My thoughts cause me to answer, and therefore I make haste, all right? It's just a way to say, hey, here's what I'm thinking, all right? Mm-hmm. All right, so he goes on and he says this, I have heard the check of my reproach. And the spirit of my understanding causeth me to answer. What he reproached Job, and he heard Job check that. You're not going to say that. So therefore, the spirit of my understanding causeth me to answer. I've thought it through. Here's what I'm going to say back to you. Knowest thou not? Come on in, Mr. Randy. Everybody wondered what happened to you. We're glad to see you. We just started Job chapter 20.
Oh, good. Now I don't have to feel guilty.
No, you need to feel guilty, but that's fine. Job chapter 20.
We really wouldn't mind if you felt guilty.
And we're at verse 4. And Zophar says this, Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment. Okay? So he's really going to say what we all know, what goes around comes around, karma, as a man soweth, so shall he reap. Every culture understands that, okay? There's no culture where they think you can just get away with stuff. And so Zophar's bringing it up, and he's basically saying, all right, Job, you know, it caught up with you, didn't it? All right? You looked real good for a while, but now you don't look good. And let me tell you something. When bad things happen to you, there's always people who will come up and know really why it happened, okay? It was interesting, again, when my family went, through what we went through, I had people come up and say, well, it's because you never had television, you didn't public school your children, everything else. I had other people come up and say, you did too much of that kind of stuff with your kids. You know, this is why it happened. And it's just everybody's sure they understand why what's happened to you has happened to you. Really, you and God are the only ones that need to figure it out, okay? Now, the triumphant of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment. Though his excellency mount up to the heavens, and his head reach unto the clouds, yet he shall perish forever like his own dung. They which have seen him shall say, where is he? So talk about a hypocritical person, and a wicked man. Wow, he'll get so high, and then it says, you know, he'll perish like his own dung. That's pretty rough, okay? You know, what happens to your dung? You flush it down the toilet, it goes up, it goes off, and it's safe. And to be honest, that's what happens to the human body, all right? It just kind of dissolves. Now, going on, it says, you know, and it says, well, where is he? Verse 8, he shall fly away as a dream, and shall not be found, yea, he shall be chased away as a vision of the night. The eye also which saw him shall see him no more, neither shall his place any more behold him. You know, it's interesting. When I was in the Philippines, it wasn't too much longer after what they called the Aquino Revolution, and they just got rid of Ferdinand Marcos. Marcos had made himself a dictator of the Philippines, and to be honest with you, he was a pretty popular dictator. He had wealth beyond any imagination. When he fell, they made great pretenses showing how his wife had 5,000 pairs of shoes and, you know, all this, the different things that they're showing about him and how much he had. I was in a police station, and I heard a local cop make this comment, and I thought it explained a lot. He just said, you know, we collect money for tickets now, but none of that money ever gets up to the federal government. He said, when Marcos was here, everybody took their share. The cop that busted the guy, he took a little bit of the fine. The judge that levied the fine, he took a little bit. He didn't dare take more because Marcos is in charge. You know, the guy who's the regional governor, he got his share. Marcos got his share, and a little bit went into the national treasury. He said, now Aquino's in charge. Aquino doesn't take a dime, but neither does any get into the national treasury. In other words, everybody's just daring to do what they want because the main thug is gone, okay? So the other thing, though, that happened, because Marcos, again, they admired him only in the sense he had everything anybody could ever want, and suddenly he's in a hospital bed in Hawaii, and he's dying, and he's nobody, and so they used to use that as an example of somebody that went from having everything to having nothing, and they talked about it in that sense. But you'll find that those things are not uncommon. My father, when he was born into one of the main wooden houses in Ellicottville, right next to a house that's got a sign on it as the first house or something in Ellicottville. It's right close to Main Street. And he was born into a family that had great wealth. For example, his grandfather owned the mineral rights to most of Western Pennsylvania and Western New York. And it had 10 children and then died in his late 30s with 10 children. And so my father was one of his grandchildren, and they had this big grand house in Ellicottville. And so my father would put on a suit to eat supper. They'd have doilies, linen out, finger bowls, all this kind of stuff, and then have a cracker on their plate because they didn't have a dime. All right, all the depression and everything had hit. And they'd been cheated out of almost everything they had. They had an uncle that ended up with everything. If you go into Ellicottville today, everything belongs to the Northrops, but a different side of the Northrops than my father was. And so my father ended up knowing what it was like, all these trap scenes and that, but basically grew up very poor. He taught us as children, and I've talked about this before, how to eat at a proper table, where for 1 year of our lives, the boys had to stand behind their chair until the girls came to the table. Then each boy went over, pulled the chair out for your sister. Disgusting to it for your sister. But, you know, and then shove your sister in. Then we'd stand behind our chair. My father would nod. All the boys would sit down. You had to know which fork was which. Eat just like that. Things passed just right. Your soup had to be eaten, brought up 90-degree angle. Eat it just like this. And you can laugh at that, but it helped me a lot later in life when I would go to better places, kind of knowing how to eat and how to do that. But my father just at one point realized, why even pretend? He just got a job as a ditch digger for Cattaraugus County and was content with that and happy with that. We lived on a poor place and on Route 16 in Machias, and he was just very content. But it's an example of how a family can go from great wealth. For example, my father used to get checks, royalty checks, from oil drilling. And then one day the state of New York told him, we've canceled all that. We've decided your family doesn't own any of it. It wasn't a lot. He might get $1,500 a year as 1/1500th of who was supposed to get this. And then the state of New York had some big lawsuit or whatever, who really owned all these things, and they canceled my great-great-grandfather's rights to the oil or something. And my father, you know, you're not going to argue for $1,500 a year. You're not going to, you know, go to court over it or something. But again, it's one of those things that here's a family, a man who went out and bought, can you imagine owning the oil rights to most of Western New York and most of Western Pennsylvania? He laid the first oil pipeline ever laid, all right, in Bradford going somewhere. And, you know, and it invested all that, and yet he died in his early 30s and had nothing, you know, and his family ended up with nothing at all, just got cheated away from him and taken away from a woman who didn't understand business. So this is what happens often. I don't know if he was a good man or a bad man. I have no idea. You know, I met some of his daughters. They were delightful people. One of them was Nelson D. Rockefeller's accountant. Died in a mysterious auto accident. Who knows what that was all about. But regardless of that, it's just these are how these things work. You know, families will have wealth for a while. It lasts for a while, and then it's gone, and it's nothing. Okay. You know, just today I thanked the Lord. There's so many things, you know, when you're growing up, you just think everything's against you and everything's awful and look at the terrible things that happened to me in life. And just today I thank the Lord again for all that ever happened, the way I was raised and everything else, because I have salvation.
That's right.
I have a wife that loves me. I have children that put up with me, all right? And, you know, and Noah Benjamin, what do we say to that, you know? And, you know, and again, I just thank the Lord. I wouldn't have thanked him years ago. I'd have thought, man, what a raw deal I have and all this. Not anymore, okay? Not anymore. God's blessed me. Yep. All right, going on, and it says this, triumph of the wicked is short. Verse 6, though his excellency mount up to the heavens and his head reach the cloud, yet he shall perish forever like his own dung. Which have seen him shall say, where is he? Shall fly away as a dream and shall not be found. He shall be chased away as a vision of the night. The eye also which saw him shall see him no more. Neither shall his place any more behold him. His children shall seek to please the poor, and his hands shall restore their goods. His bones are full of the sin of his youth, which shall lie down with him in the dust. Okay? It's a pretty rough thing. Though wickedness be sweet in his mouth, though he hide it under his tongue, though he spare it and forsake it not, yet keep it still within his mouth, yet his meat in his bowels is turned, it is the gall of asp within him. This is what Zophar's saying to Job. He's basically telling Job, look, I know why you're in the situation you're in. That in itself is pretty tough to take. But just keep in mind, when you stumble and fall, there will be people who just delight in your fall, okay? And they'll come up and they'll have all sorts of reasons why this happened to you and talk to you about it. And you know what? Don't argue with them. Just smile at them, pat them on their pointed little head. You know, thank them for what they have to say and their concern or whatever else. Verse 15 says, he has swallowed down riches. He shall vomit them up again. God shall cast them out of his belly. He shall suck the poison of ass. The viper's tongue shall slay him. He shall not see the rivers, the floods, the brooks of honey and water. That which he labored for shall he restore and shall not swallow it down. According to his substance shall the restitution be. He shall not rejoice therein. Because he hath oppressed and hath forsaken the poor. Because he hath violently taken away an house which he builded not. Surely he shall not feel quietness in his belly. He shall not save of that which he desired. There shall none of his meat be left.
Didn't he already point out that he hadn't let people go hungry when he had means and things like that?
Yeah, they're not believing it. Zophar's not buying it. Okay? But again, what are they doing with Jesus Christ on the cross? Okay, for one thing, he did take all this upon himself. He did become guilty of every bit of this. He hung on that cross, and everything that's being said here, he is guilty of that. Okay. So again, verse 19, because he hath oppressed and forsaken the poor, because he hath violently taken away in the house which he built not, surely he shall not feel quietness in his belly, he shall not save of that which he desired. There shall none of his meat be left, therefore shall no man look for his goods. In the fullness of his sufficiency he shall be in straits, every hand of the wicked shall come upon him. When he is about to fill his belly, God shall cast the fury of his wrath upon him and shall rain it upon him while he is eating. He shall flee from the iron weapon, and the bow of steel shall strike him through. It is drawn and cometh out of the body, yet the glittering sword cometh out of his gall. Terrors are upon him. All darkness shall be hid in his secret places. A fire not blown shall consume him. He shall go ill with him that is left in his tabernacle. The heavens shall reveal his iniquity, and the earth shall rise up against him. The increase of his house shall depart, and his goods shall flow away in the day of his wrath. This is the portion of a wicked man from God and the heritage appointed unto him by God. So, again, the gloves are off. Okay? Nobody's believing why Job's in the situation he is. Okay, they're not answering him right. They've not answered Job right. Now, what's Job going to say? Verse 21. But Job answered and said, hear diligently my speech and let this be your consolations. Suffer me that I speak, and after that I have spoken, mock on. You know, go on, fellas, say what you're going to say. As for me, is my complaint to man? And if it were so, why should not my spirit be troubled? Mark me and be astonished and lay your hand upon your mouth. Even when I remember, I am afraid, and trembling taketh hold on my flesh. Wherefore do the wicked live, become old, and are mighty in power? He's saying, hey, look, this is a Psalm 73 type of thing where I looked at the wicked and was jealous. Sometimes wicked people live old, okay? I was reading of a thing of a woman pirate back in the 1600s, 1700s in the Caribbean. And a horrible person. Terrible things she did with her crew and such. And they said she died of old age in bed in England. Okay. You know, she's probably not happy in hell, but she died of old age, happy in bed. And sometimes the wicked die that way. Okay. Horrible, horrible people. Joseph Stalin. Died in bed, okay? You know, just a horrible man. There's no end to how horrible he is. Timothy and I just got done reading a book called Stalin's War, and the man's basically rewriting World War II. And let me tell you something. I've read about World War II for the last 40 years. This author has it right. He's just basically saying people don't understand that we traded Hitler for Stalin, and Stalin was far worse than Hitler. Far more people died. Far more places were conquered. People lived far worse lives under him. Far worse than they ever did under Hitler. And again, he's not commending Hitler. Hitler was a horrible man. And he goes to the point of how foolish the Allies were and how much money they pumped into Stalin. They should have just let Stalin and Hitler beat themselves to death with each other. Instead, Stalin ended up with, just took over countries that were peaceful, Western-style countries, and torturing people and taking over and communizing their households, and ended up with more land in China than Japan was trying to take. And you know, just all that he got out of it, and, you know, died peacefully in bed. You know, horrible man. And again, no other word. There was another book, I didn't discuss this with Timothy, a guy wrote a private book one time about Stalin's alcoholism. I'll be with you in just a second. And how that Stalin would get drunk sometimes, and they'd talk about a problem. He'd say, just deport them all. So next thing you know, everybody's in Allegheny County. Suddenly troops are coming, just taking you out of your house. Stalin was drunk that night, angry. Somebody did something, and he didn't even want to deal with it. They'd all get deported, and they'd never see their homes again.
How do they die happy when normally evil people would be depressed?
Well, that's what they're saying. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Job's saying sometimes they don't. God takes care of it later. Keep in mind the law of sowing and reaping. I'm reading a book right now that talks about this extensively. And what the man's saying, it's a man that's been a pastor for 60 years and 50 of it, a counselor, kind of like what Dale's studied to be. And he's talking about Christian abusers. What's a Christian abuser? A person who comes to a church but is abusive. Okay? You wouldn't know it in church. But at home, they're an abusive person. And he's just talking about that. And he says, one of the rules of sowing and reaping is that you don't always reap immediately. That sometimes reaping comes much later. I'd had a conversation with someone about a fairly well-known evangelist who somebody from another time had talked to me about how this man was terrible to his wife and children at home. And just a horrible person. And one of the things they talk about is the idea that what an abuser does, he has a vision of what his spouse is supposed to be or his children are supposed to be. Their spouse can't fill that vision. That isn't who they really are, okay? So they just keep beating them with a hammer everywhere they're out of that vision of that person and just angry with them and beating them, and they're never allowed to rest. You're not this, you're not that. But what in normal society, abusers do that all the time. But in Christian ones, they use the Bible. Well, I'm the head of the household. Yeah, you're also an idiot, and you're also a jerk, all right? You're supposed to love your wife as Christ so loved the church, okay? He didn't build this vision and start beating her with a hammer, okay? And, you know, it's that idea is to love her as his own flesh. You know, they ignore the context of that. And it's amazing how often that happens. This guy, you can tell he's dealing with a lot of Hiles-type churches. These guys with the bus ministries running. Go ahead.
Are you talking about a saved person doing that?
Well, this guy assumes they're saved.
They go to church.
Yeah, in other words, I get the impression his notes are from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, when you had all these phony baloney Hiles, quick prayerism type churches out there. Are there saved people who do that? Yes. There were things that he talked about I caught myself in, okay? I thought to myself, ooh, that explains Ruth Ann in my early days, you know, this year. You know, me having a vision of what a wife should be. She even had a vision that wasn't her, okay? And it was hard on her because she had this vision that really isn't her of this ideal woman. It would just depress her because that's not her. And yet, in our talks together, here's what a wife should be, so I'm holding her up to that. And that's not her, okay? So I could see myself in that, Randy.
Now, is that a problem for most starting couples, marital-wise?
It's one of the things all couples have to work out, how you communicate, how you work those things out and such. There's no couple that it just suddenly, bing, it's all wonderful, and we're just, you know, there's always tensions, things have to be ironed out. You know, my mother had a cat for 18 years, and it was a wild cat. I mean, we dragged it into the house, and, you know, one of those, and it hated, you know, all those kind of things. But eventually, we coaxed it out of the field where it was in. It would eat kind of in a field, run away. And after a year or so, it ended up having some babies, but it had them by the couch. And after that, it couldn't get it out of the house. You know, it became a tamed cat. But the thing is, she had it for 18 years. And each one had their rules, my mother and that cat. And for the most part, they agreed where each one was allowed and each one wasn't allowed. The place that they never got straight was the laundry basket in the closet in the bathroom. To the cat, it was okay. To my mother, it wasn't. And in 18 years, that was never settled, all right? You know, what? You're in here again? You know, you see the cat running around wild-eyed or whatever, and, you know. And, you know, then my mother, just rolling her eyes and letting the cat stay or whatever. Marriages are like that. There are certain places you never quite get it settled in all the years there what the rules are, but those are usually few. They're not terrible. They can be funny in the long run. But every marriage has to solve certain issues, okay? Who's in charge of what? For example, my wife is to guide the house. I tell the direction the house is going in, okay? But she's to guide it. Therefore, I may not like what she cooked for dinner, but get out of my kitchen because I'm guiding the house. This is what I made for dinner. If I don't like that, I can tell her I don't particularly like that meal. She might explain to me, then bring more money home. We don't have it. You know? But these are the kind of things you go back and forth, all right?
Don't be looking at us.
Yeah. You know, but you go back and forth on these things, and you're never going to have these things perfectly settled. But we do have it straight that she guides the house, okay? That's up to her. Where furniture goes in the house, where we, you know, what color rooms are, that's up to her. She guides the house, okay? I tell the direction the house is going. I've had her sit and cry. When I put the kids in public school, she sit and cried, okay? I'm the ruler of the house, you know. How they dress for public school, that's up to you, you know. They resented the little shorts with the suspenders and that, but no. But again, it's just that idea that knowing the division of those things. But in our early day, you know, Ruth Ann and I, we courted around the Bible. My first conversations with her were about a King James Bible. She didn't believe the King James Bible. But she's one of the girls that came up to the Servicemen Center, and I'd talk to her, and she'd argue back with me and come back and things. And we'd go back and forth, and we just talked and talked. The first time she ever showed up, we were going to go drink coffee together. She showed up wearing a pantsuit. I sent her home, told her to go get changed. why? You know why? Because we're not solid yet. If she didn't like that, she's not the right one, okay? A little Mick Jagger in me, under my thumb, all right? You know? But, you know, the point is this. This is still voluntary on her part whether or not she wants to be with me, okay? So what Audie's done, a lot of things, Ricky will say, this is the way it's going to be. She has a choice now. She can say, no, you know what? I've decided he's a tyrant. I don't want to be with him. This is a period of time for her to decide that, okay? And she's keeping her ammunition, her powder dry. Wait till he finds out, you know. Right? But regardless of that, those are things that have to be worked out. What I'm talking about is the idea of unrealistic expectations. You come home. Remember the old shows that used to be on, Leave It to Beaver and, you know, Aunt Bee and all that. You come home, everything's perfect, everything's on the table, the children are just right, you know, and all this kind of thing. That happens one out of every 10 days and usually by accident, all right? And, you know, but a husband has this vision of always coming home and seeing that. So what he does is he beats his wife every time it's not there, just verbally, okay? What he does is say things that hurt her, okay? They hurt, and they make her like a child. They make her into something, you know, like some terrible thing. And again, God hates that. It's a terrible thing when a man does it to a wife, but they do it, okay?
You know, Pastor, on that note, you once told me years ago you don't automatically need a fist to strike a woman. Kind of solidifies that.
No, that's right. You know, a woman, you can hurt a woman so bad, all right? Just certain things you can say, all right? I go up to my wife, you were dumb enough to marry me. Ah! Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So Job is just going on with this thing. He's just talking about how sometimes the wicked do live long, okay? So he says in verse 7 of Job 21, wherefore do the wicked live, become old, and are mighty in power? Their seed is established in their sight before them, and their offspring before their eyes. There's families like that. They're big American families, okay? Famous names, wicked men, okay? Launch their sons to presidencies, their children have yachts, they have great names, everything else. They've set up the tax laws in this country to exempt themselves with foundations. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? Well, if you were to go out there and make your first $1 million, the government's going to take 60% of it one way or another. When they make $1 million, the government doesn't take it because they own foundations. The foundations are charitable. For example, the Clinton Foundation gives away 5% of everything it gets, but it gets billions of dollars a year. It gives away 5%, therefore it's charitable. Where's the other billions go? Okay. Jets to Europe and here and there, and whoever needs a salary. Okay, you need a salary. How much do you need your salary to be? $1 million a year? That's no problem. Let's up the taxes on the rich. Okay, yeah, I'll need more of a salary now. I'll need $2 million out of the foundation. It never affects them. Okay, what it affects is that poor Laotian immigrant that's come over here and finally built his first supermarket and getting out there, making it for the first time, and they hammer him to keep him from ever getting to where they are. And they own all that. So this is what Job's talking about. And their seed just go on. But sooner or later, payday someday. Okay? Payday someday. All right? He goes on and he says, verse 9, their houses are safe from fear, neither is the rod of God upon them. Their bull gendereth and faileth not. Their cow calveth and casteth not her calf. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children dance. They take the timbrel and harp and rejoice at the sound of the organ. They spend their days in wealth, and in a moment go down to the grave. Therefore they say unto God, depart from us, for we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. Michael Barone, who has been writing about every presidential election since 1972, and it's interesting, as Michael Barone says, I have not changed my political leaning since 1972. In 1972, I was considered a liberal. I have not changed any of my ideas, and I'm seen as a conservative today. This gives you an idea how things have changed. But he points out that if you go look at areas that are super liberal, New York City, San Francisco, Connecticut, Rhode Island, that's where people mostly have inherited their wealth. Mm-hmm. They didn't make wealth, they inherited it, okay? They have no idea where wealth came from, okay? They were born and taking the best tennis lessons and on the Riviera and here and there. And they have no idea. So let's help the little people and send them, you know, what we'd like is factories here, not more social workers, all right? We can't have factories here because they tax Allegheny County like it's Westchester County, New York, okay? Like it's where all the rich live. And so, you know, what factory would be dumb enough to start here? I heard a guy talk and he said, if you wanted to build a factory in Erie County, New York, there are over 300 elected officials who can stop you. In other words, if a local union comes up and said, oh, they're not hiring our plumbers, no permit. All right, we'll hire their plumbers. Okay, now somebody else is mad. So in order to build a factory in Erie County, you have to get the senators involved, the governor involved, everybody gets their palms greased, everybody has to be, everybody's just happy, they build it and everything else, and then they rarely make it. If you wanted to build a factory in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, where Charlotte is, there are 12 men who could make a decision about it, and if any one of them slowed you down for a moment, they wouldn't have their job. And you wonder why everybody's moving to North Carolina. Okay? But New York will stay that way for another generation or two until it finally just collapses under the weight of its bureaucracy. And then by that time, the South will have collapsed itself. Okay? Everybody's moving from California to Texas. Everybody's moving from, you know, Virginia and Massachusetts and New York to Florida. What happens then? Those states turn purple and begin to vote wrong. Go ahead.
They have billboards out in Utah saying, it's a good time to sell your house to a Californian.
Yeah. There you are.
I've seen them grow past. Yep.
And there's the people. They'll come from California to Texas. It never occurs to them how they pull that voting lever is what destroyed California. So they come and they begin to vote that way, and it just destroys everything. So sooner or later, New York will collapse under its own weight. Michigan and different places are beginning to do that, collapse under their own weight, and you see a shift in that stuff go on.
So what, United States dominoes here?
It's just typical, okay? Typical dominoes. Mm. All right. So because they have all this and everything just works so peachy keen for them, verse 15, what is the Almighty that we should serve him? And what profit should we have if we pray unto him? Lo, their good is not in their hand. The counsel of the wicked is far from me. How oft is the candle of the wicked put out, and how oft cometh their destruction upon them. God distributeth sorrows in his anger. Okay? So when these things do come, okay, look at 911. It wasn't the poor up there in the Twin Towers. Okay? You know, and what happens? He distributes his anger, and it comes upon him. Verse 18, then there is stubble before the wind as the chaff the storm carrieth away. God layeth up his iniquity for his children. He rewardeth him, and he shall know it. His eyes shall see his destruction. He shall drink of the wrath of the Almighty. For what pleasure hath he in his house after him when the number of his month is cut off in the midst? Shall any teach God knowledge, seeing he judgeth those that are on high? One dieth in his full strength, being wholly at ease and quiet. His breasts are full of milk. Now, what's it? How can a man's breast be full of milk? Because he's one flesh. Okay? Sam, breasts, filled with milk. All right? That's what that's talking about. Why? Because his wife is going to breastfeed her children. Okay? The same with the Kuntzes. All right? That's what goes on. So it says his breasts are full of milk. In other words, it's working the way it's supposed to. Okay? All right. They're talking about the one flesh here. All right. Thank you. And another dieth in the bitterness of his soul and never eateth with pleasure. They shall lie down alike together in the dust, and the worm shall cover them. In other words, go to the Black Creek graveyard and you wouldn't know who had happy lives and who had miserable lives. You wouldn't know who hated their wife and who loved their wife. You know, you wouldn't know any of that. You don't know who... You know, just every moment of their life was a bitter, depressing thing, and the other one who just loved every moment of their life. You can't, they're all laying down in the grave together. It goes on and it says this, verse 27, behold, I know your thoughts and the devices which ye wrongfully imagine against me. For ye say, where is the house of the prince? And where is the dwelling place of the wicked? Have ye not asked them that go by the way? Do ye not know their tokens? That the wicked is reserved to the day of destruction. They shall be...
Tokens?
They're tokens, they're signs. A token in a game is a symbol of where you are. Okay.
Right.
Tokens, this is a token gesture, for example.
All right.
Tokens, in other words, something to show, something, a symbolism.
Identification.
Yeah. that the wicked is reserved to the day of destruction. They shall be brought forth to the day of wrath. Who shall declare his way to his face? And who shall repay what he hath done? Yet shall he be brought to the grave and shall remain in the tomb. The clods of the valley shall be sweet unto him. And every man shall draw after him as there a new world before him. How then comfort ye me in vain, seeing your answers the remain of falsehood? See? In other words, he's saying, look, not just, you know, everybody goes through these things. The rich go through it, the poor go through it. It happens to them all. They all go to the grave. You can't judge me based on what you see happen to me. Now, that's a true statement, okay? It doesn't stop people, but it's a true statement.
Pastor, one other thing. For us, like for saved people, God disciplines us because he loves us. But this says that he distributed his sorrow and his anger.
And keep in mind, this is part of the sowing and reaping of the natural world, okay? God is angry with the wicked every day. There are judgments that come upon nations and such. This is one of the jobs of a preacher, is to explain what's going on, that you can understand. Didn't it help you when you came here and suddenly it's being straightened out? I went to Word of Life. I think I'm saved. Didn't it help to realize, no, none of that was salvation.
Right.
You know, none of that was all these things that have happened to me. Some are evil done against me. Some are evil done by me. And it helped you to sort all that out. Okay. So in God's mercy, he didn't let your wickedness work. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if the first time you'd ever gotten involved selling things or it really had worked?
Right.
And you really had made tons of money. You know, and you'd become wealthy and you're just this bitter woman with this big house and some rental properties and every one of your tenants hated you. And, you know, you'd have just gone to hell. And yet God in his mercy saw to it, no, I'll never let you succeed in that. I will see to it you don't succeed in that. And, you know, pretty bitter at the time when you weren't succeeding, but nevertheless, because God does that. The preacher's job is to come in and explain to people, not specifically, Kyle Beale, the reason your car didn't start the other day is because 3 days ago you didn't read the chapter you were saying. No, you know, that is, but it's overall to show people. You know, Ronnie and Amy and I were talking, and it was just that idea, one of the luxuries you have in this church is the luxury of being lost.
Mm-hmm.
The what? Mm-hmm. Most churches, they hit you with a hammer quick, bam, you know, all right, now you're saved. Ooh, you know. And nobody's saved in those churches. They're all under this pressure and nothing works. They pray prayers that don't work. They try to take promises and make them work. The promises don't work. And so one of the things this church does is give you that liberty of saying, hey, I don't have Jesus. I don't have this. And let God show you why. Because keep in mind, knowing you're lost and knowing why you're lost are 100 million miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? To the fundamentalist, the moment you know you're lost, oh, get saved now. Well, that, you know, knowing why you're lost, okay? And God getting to the bottom of you, what you are, showing you. People say, well, how do I know I've repented enough? When the Holy Ghost is satisfied, you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
When the Holy Ghost is satisfied with your repentance, you'll realize he's satisfied. He's done. It's over. He's not your enemy anymore. He's not your prosecuting attorney anymore. He's completely sad. You'll know he's satisfied, okay?
You won't ask if you repented enough, will you?
What's that?
You won't ask if you repented enough.
If you repented enough. You'll just realize. You'll go, oh my goodness. You realize it's over, okay? You know, one of the illustrations I use in the book is the idea, imagine having a child, and some of you with older children, it's easier for you to imagine, who you find out has been running their mouth on you. Really saying stuff that's hurtful, okay? And it's a terrible thing. So they come by the house. You're a little bit cold with them. You're not mean, but there's a breach between you and them, okay? There's a problem, okay? And, you know, they're going on, and so now they realize, oh, yeah, there's a problem with you, you know. And so now they realize there's a problem, so they start to confess things. Well, you know, I really did steal those cookies in the eighth grade, and that's not what you're angry at, okay? You're not angry at all this other stuff they're trying to bring up and everything. And finally, There's something you say where, oh my goodness, they see themselves through your eyes and realize how terrible what they said really hurt. I hurt my mother so bad in what I said. And they're so ashamed of themselves and how they said it. What comes out of them will be so natural, okay? When they show to you, I am so ashamed of this. Some parents get that in life, some never get it, okay? But the point is, it's said. And you know what? It's over now. That's all you needed. It's over. You love that person, okay? The restoration is made. And that's all God's looking for, is that moment. You know, people confess all these terrible things I've done, and he's looking for that thing that defines you, that makes you such a grief to him. Makes you somebody that it's a shame that he would ever call you a child of God. And when God's shown you that, it's over, it's done. Okay? It's settled. Never be brought up again. All right, let's go a little bit further. Eliphaz the Temanite, certainly the greatest of Job's three friends, and we've already talked, the only one that gets quoted in the New Testament. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "Can a man be profitable to God as he that is wise may be profitable unto himself?" Well, is a man profitable to God? Okay. I think a man can submit himself to God and be used of God, and we'll find out later whether or not God profited by that. If he does, it's because a man is wholly submitted to him with none of his own ways, desires, or anything else, and he's a vessel that God completely can use, okay? But Eliphaz the Temanite asked that question. Verse 3, "Is it any pleasure to the Almighty that thou art righteous?" Well, keep in mind, he's mocking Job's righteousness, which isn't a bad thing to do, okay? God's not sitting there, "Oh, I'm so glad that Job's a righteous man." Job's self-righteous is what his problem is. And Eliphaz has caught on to that. Then he goes on, and verse 3 again, "Is any pleasure to the Almighty that thou art righteous? Or is it a gain to him that thou makest thy ways perfect?" Okay, God said, "Boy, I'm a lot richer now. Look how perfect Job is." Verse 4, "Will he reprove thee for fear of thee? Will he enter with thee into judgment?" So is God going to come up and reprove you and show you what's wrong, Job, because he's scared of you? No, all right? "Will he enter with thee into judgment?" What's it talking about there? Like go into court, let somebody else figure it out. Remember Job asked if we could have a daysman betwixt us? Somebody to figure this thing out between me and God? No, God's not going to go into court and enter into judgment with you. All right, that's not going to happen. All right. Now, verse 5, "Is not thy wickedness great and thine iniquities infinite?" Well, life is, let's just empty the laundry basket, all right? You know, they're infinite, all right? And he's going to pour it all out here. "For thou hast taken a pledge from thy brother for naught and hast stripped the naked of their clothing." Well, Job, bless that. But keep in mind again, this is all the sin put on Jesus Christ on the cross, okay? You imagine the irony of Jesus Christ, who only did good, now being guilty of all these things and knowing he's guilty, feeling the shame of that guilt, feeling the shame of what you've done, and taking it. "He took my sins and my sorrows. He made them his very own." We sing that, okay? He didn't just take them, "Ugh, I got Ronnie's sin on me." Ugh. No, he made it his own, okay? Made it his own. You know, one of the worst things you'll see, sometimes you'll see these pictures of a guy being interrogated by police in the South America or something, and the cop will go and spit in his mouth. You know, and it's probably one of the most gross things you could think of, all right? Not as gross as Jesus Christ taking your sin and making it his, okay? Making that shame of your life, and it's his shame now. And just an awful thing. Job is being accused of all these things. Keep in mind, Job 16, we saw Job as Jesus on the cross and the wrath of God against him. And they're pouring all this upon him now. Then he says this, verse 7, "Thou hast not given water to the weary to drink. Thou hast withholden bread from the hungry. But as for the mighty man, he had the earth, and the honorable man dwelled in it. Thou hast sent widows away empty, and the arms of the fatherless have been broken. Therefore snares are round about thee, and sudden fear troubleth thee, or darkness that thou cannot see, and abundance of waters cover thee. Is not God in the height of heaven? And behold, the height of the stars, how high are they? And thou sayest, how doth God know? Can he judge through the dark cloud? That clouds are a covering to him, that he seeth not, and he walketh the circuit of heaven. That's what you see at the cross. Darkness comes upon it. God's walking through the heavens. And my God, why hast thou forsaken me? All right, and behind that veil of thick darkness, Habakkuk said, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil. Okay?
You know, there's another part in the Bible where it talks about the dust of his feet are what make the clouds.
That's right.
And when he just said circuit, I went,
there you go. Matter. That's good, Tanya. All right. Verse 15, hast thou marked the old way which wicked men have trodden, which were cut down out of time, whose foundation was overthrown with a flood, okay? Which said unto God, depart from us, what can the Almighty do for them? Yet he filled their houses with good things, but the counsel of the wicked is far from me. So God was kind to him. Keep in mind again, one of the things it says is the goodness of God leadeth thee to repentance. In God's working with each and every person, he does give them good things in their life, hoping that they'll turn to him and be thankful for those things, okay? Verse 19, the righteous see it and are glad, the innocent laugh them to scorn. Whereas our substance is not cut down, but the remnant of them the fire consumeth. Acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace thereby. Good shall come unto thee. Receive, I pray thee, the law from his mouth and lay up his words in thine heart. You know, it's good advice, you know. Acquaint yourself with him, be at peace with him, put it, you know, have his law there. But it's not good to stand there and accuse a guy of all these particular sins. Verse 23, if thou return to the Almighty, thou shalt be built up, and thou shalt put away iniquity far from thy tabernacles. Then shalt thou lay up gold as dust, and the gold of Ophir as the stones of the brooks. Yea, the Almighty shall be thy defense, and thou shalt have plenty of silver. For then shalt thou have thy delight in the Almighty, and shalt lift up thy face unto God. Thou shalt make thy prayer unto him, and he shall hear thee, and thou shalt pay thy vows. Thou shalt also decree a thing, and it shall be established unto thee, and the light shall shine upon thy ways. When men are cast down, then thou shalt say, there is lifting up. And he shall save the humble person. He shall deliver the island of the innocent, and it is delivered by the pureness of thine hands. All that's correct. Misapplied. You know, again, one of the things that happens is Job's friends will talk, but they say things out of context that really don't quite fit. Okay? They're all true statements, you know. You know, Ronnie comes to me and says, my wife's mad at me. Well, Ronnie, women don't like to be screamed at and called terrible names, you know. Is that right? Yeah, that's true. What am I doing? I'm accusing Ronnie of screaming at his wife and calling her terrible names. See what I mean? It's true what I said, but I'm applying it the wrong way. You have to be so careful of what you say to people and what you throw upon them, and be ever so careful about what you put out, all right?
The whole timing is everything bit.
Timing is everything, and whether or not it's the truth, all right? Never assume, all right?
Right, I remember. I
right. Now. You make a Randy of you and me, all right? And we don't want to. All right. Mr. Kyle Beal, would you close us in prayer, please?
Safe travel. In Jesus' precious and holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen.